so he gets to talk, which is fantastic. Then he was also at the Sierra Conservation Center, the SCC, from 2017 to 2019, and started his career as a correctional officer in, you guessed it, Folsom State Prison in 1983. So we will be hearing from Johnny Cash today.
Of course.
Because how could you not? At the CCC, he promoted from correctional sergeant through the ranks to associate warden. He was the chief deputy warden in an acting capacity for 7 months, included during the warden's absence for weeks at a time. So I don't know where the warden was, but Hunter was playing warden during that time. So he wasn't just a guy who worked there. I mean, he worked there and kind of ran the place and then officially did run the place. At the Sierra Conservation Center, he was the chief deputy warden for 9 months and the warden for 2 years. The CCC and the SCC are sister institutions in that they are the only two institutions that train inmate firefighters and oversee the conservation camps in partnership with CAL FIRE. So then the last item here, also spent 2 years as a camp commander managing one of the conservation camps. And it's really important, I think, for people to understand that this feed into the firefighting system is really important out here in California. And it's fitting that we talk about this during fire season and the idea that they're going to, you know, cut back people who work in that system at, I mean, as our fires continue to increase, is just ridiculous. He was also the associate warden over at some of the northern camps, 18 camps at that time in the CCC. So he's done a whole bunch of things. I've never actually talked to him before, so we'll find out what he sounds like. Hi, Hunter.
Hi, Aaron. How are you doing?
Good. We'll have to play a little bit with sound. I've been told that sometimes when we have people on the phone that they're difficult to hear. So I guess if people are having difficulty hearing, maybe you could give us a call if you're listening live here on Sunday at about 10 after 12 here. If you're listening on a recording, it'll be real good because Robert takes out the commercials and adjusts the sound. But if you're having difficulty hearing us, you can give us a call at 530-605-4567, and maybe Travis can make some adjustments. So where would you like to start?
Well, I was going to start with the history of the California Correctional Center, actually. The Correctional Center was opened in 1963. It's the California State Prison System currently has, well, they just closed DVI, but at 35 prisons, but there's 12 we will always refer to as the original 12. So of the original 12, CCC was the next to last one built in 1963. And that's relevant because some of our prisons are almost 200 years old. San Quentin and Folsom in the 1800s they were built. So, of course, their maintenance costs and stuff are pretty extensive. Also, in 1988, they activated another facility at the California Correctional Center, the celled environment, level 3. So that part of the prison's rather new by prison standards. Department of Corrections started a massive prison expansion in the mid-80s through the 90s. And part of that expansion was they wanted to site prisons in communities that wanted them. They didn't want to force prisons in. Except L.A. County, because L.A. County didn't want one, so they forced one in that county. But other than that, they had local ballot initiatives. So with CCC already being in Lassen County, they had a ballot initiative in 92, and the citizens of Lassen County approved the second prison. So it kind of shows you that the citizens of this county have supported the Department of Corrections since 1963. And there was many counties that voted those ballot initiatives down. Modoc County, Biggs, Weed, just a lot of cities didn't want one, and I get it. So with the closing of the mills, environmentalists and tree huggers stopping logging, that was a primary, that and farming supported Susanville. They closed the last mill in 2008 in Susanville, so it's been a prison town. They've even made, there've been documentaries on Prison Town USA about Susanville. But the California Correctional Center's mission from the start was to train minimum custody inmates as firefighters. and to work cooperatively with CAL FIRE. So what that basically means is we get these inmates in, we classify them either physically and based on their case factors, are sent to a fire training program. And it starts out with physical fitness, and institution staff get them up to speed where they can pass the tests. And then we turn them over to CAL FIRE, and CAL FIRE spends 2 weeks with them, teaching them about fire activity, how to use hand tools and stuff like that. And then we send them out to the various camps. Like I said, we had 18 camps. I think the number's down to 14 with the cuts of camps. And CAL FIRE is our partners in this. For basically every custody staff out there, there's at least one CAL FIRE employee. We turn the crews over to them 5 days a week to go out and work. They could be cleaning a school, building a hiking trail, cutting a potential fire break for future fires. And then during fire season, these inmates go out on fires and under the supervision of CAL FIRE. But what that actually looks like, they call it a strike team configuration. But what it really looks like is two crews of inmates, anywhere from 12 to 18 inmates. Each one of them has a fire captain assigned to them, or they're assigned to a fire captain. And then there's a third fire captain called the strike team leader. So you have three CAL FIRE employees, and also with them are three CDCR employees. Two officers, one assigned with each of the crews, and then a custody supervisor, a sergeant or a lieutenant, and he's the counterpart of the strike team leader. And a 14-hour time period on a fire would look kind of like this. The custody staff would have custody of inmates. They'd get them up at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and they would get them all dressed. They'd do their hygiene, brush their teeth, stuff like that. We take them to the chow. They pick up all the supplies they're going to need for the next 24 hours. Basically, they get two-sack lunches that are about 7,000 or 8,000 calories, cases of Gatorade, cases of water, ice to keep it cool, and then the custody staff meet up with the CAL FIRE staff, and their strike team leader will go to the fire briefing and get their fire assignment for the day, while the fire captain's getting their crews organized and getting them on the crew vans, and then we basically turn custody of the inmates over to CAL FIRE for 24 hours. So we'll follow the crews up into the woods or wherever they're going to be fighting fire. The CDCR staff will stay back so that we don't want to pose, if we get in danger from the fire, then we just added another problem to it. So we stay back in it safely, but where we can respond if there's a inmate injury, so we can take it to a local hospital. If an inmate was to refuse to work or they had some kind of disciplinary problem out there, then we would respond and address that issue. So that's always been the primary mission of the California Correctional Center, as well as Sierra Conservation Center in Central California. In the off season, and I touched on this, when they're not working on fires, they do a wide variety of community betterment projects, but they don't work. They never work for private. They always work for some public entity or municipality, schools, post office, and they do a lot of work around the community to keep it clean. We have, Lawson County, we have miles and miles of mountain bike trails and hiking trails that were all put in by inmates. And I'll tell you something interesting about the inmates in the fire camp program. They are in custody, and most of them are going home within a year or two. But those guys will tell you that this prison experience and fighting fire and do something positive had significant changes in their life. I spent 37 years almost, just short of 37 years in public corrections, and I never had an inmate call me after he paroled to tell me how well he was doing. At fire camp, it happens all the time. We get one or two calls a week from people that paroled anywhere from a week ago to 2 years ago just to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm working here. I'm not using anymore. I'm not having any problems. In my personal opinion, it's the best rehabilitative program Department of Corrections in California has ever had.
Wow.
So, also, like I said before, California Correctional Center opened the facility in 1988, and that's 1,000 man housing unit. for medium custody inmates. And I don't want to be redundant, but by prison standards, 1988 is the new prison. They built all new prisons from 84 to about 96.
Interesting. So, at the last time we had a massive crime wave, just like we're doing now, and all of a sudden we decided, gosh, you know what? Maybe all this crime could be solved if we arrested the criminals. What a sweet idea. Hunter, we've got to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Hunter Angel. We're talking about the closure of the California Correctional Center up in Susanville. And just in case you were thinking, well, I guess I don't care about that. I'm not going to prison. Don't know anybody in prison. Don't live in Susanville. Don't live in California, maybe. But as you know, we love to export our bad ideas to other places.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to get into why they're doing this and kind of the mindset behind it. And I guarantee our bad ideas are coming for a place near you. So it'd be kind of fun if you already knew what was happening. You could watch for the signs and stop it early. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antone.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at estategranite.com.
Reading Electric Utility, like more than 2,000 utilities across the country, is a nonprofit public power agency owned by the customers. This year, we are celebrating 100 years of serving the city of Reading. October 3rd through the 9th is Public Power Week, and we celebrate the benefits of living in a public power community. These benefits include low rates and local control. Community ownership means your money stays right here in Reading. Publicly owned utilities like REU provide excellent service and work directly for the community.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Couldn't resist.
Yeah.
So, so we have all of these people in the. I think your bio, Hunter, said, yeah, you were the associate warden over the northern camps. There were 18 camps at that time. And we have how many left now?
There was 18 that CCC supported, and there was 19 SCC supported. And they closed four northern camps and four southern camps. So CCC currently supports 14 northern fire camps.
And how much, I know it's kind of, I don't know, maybe it is easy to quantify. I was going to say maybe it's hard to tell, but how much does CAL FIRE count on the inmate crews to, you know, when our fire, now I guess it's a season, when our fire season gets ramped up?
So up until about 3 years ago, the only inmate, the only hand crews for CAL FIRE were inmate hand crews. With some of the policies that have started releasing inmates early, the inmate population has shrunk. Therefore, they've started to hire their hand crews to hire young men to do it. But, and they also have the California Conservation Corps has, last time I knew, they had 8 crews statewide, most of them in Southern California.
So CAL FIRE never had hand crews prior to this?
No, they used inmates for hand crews. They hired seasonal firefighters to work on their engines, but their hand crews were all inmate labor. When you see pictures of a fire, a wildland fire on the news, and you see guys in orange, you're seeing inmate firefighters. And I can tell you, if you go back and look at a bunch of photos from fires or whatever was put on the news, 90% of the time they're wearing orange. If you see yellow or khaki, those are federal firefighters.
Interesting. So for the people who have the luxury of not living in a fire zone, their houses are being ripped off the ground by, you know, tornadoes, or they're being washed away with hurricanes. they have their own special stuff. Doesn't have to be lurid detail, but what do hand crews do? Like, what does that mean?
They cut fire break around fire, and that could be anything from responding to an area where there's homes that are threatened by fire and cutting the trees down and clearing the brush around those homes, to actually doing a direct attack on the fire itself, depending on the fire. They do backfiring operations. The uniqueness about CAL FIRE is they work 24-hour shifts, which sounds crazy, but at night, your humidities come up. Usually the winds die down, and they can be most effective. They're not going to start a backfire. If they have a fire and they build a dozer line, and then the inmates come in behind the bulldozer line and clean it up so it's sterile, there's no fuels in there at all, at some point they want to burn that fuel between the fire and that line, because you could have a 30-foot fire line, but some of these fires, especially the ones we have right now, they're throwing embers a mile out in front of the fire.
Yeah.
So while you're fighting a big fire, you have 10 little fires stuck behind you. So in the backfiring operations, they'll do that at night, and they'll just actually light the fuels next to the line and let it burn back towards the fire to double, triple, quadruple, just make that line so the fire can't get past it. They also, the one thing I witnessed and do a lot, because when you're done, we have a fire real close to us right now, the Dixie Fire. It's 220,000 acres. I heard the other day they have 200 miles of hose line laid on that fire. Do you know who rolls up that hose when the fire's over? Primarily inmates do that work.
Wow.
Interesting. And so, the inmates that do this, it's not like somebody's, you know, holding a gun to their head and making them go do this.
No, the inmates, first of all, the living conditions out there, there's a lot more freedom. There's no walls around a fire camp. There's signs that says camp limits. There's only 2 custody staff on duty on the morning shift. There's 2 in the afternoon shift and 1 at night. So you have anywhere 80 to 120 inmates at camp, and there's 1 officer out there all night long with them. Counts them every 2 hours, make sure they're all there, and takes care of any needs they have.
Do you have an issue with guys taking off on those fires, or are they pretty good about staying with
them? Not on the fires. We have what we call walkaways. There's a difference in the California Penal Code between an escape and a walkaway. An escape is from a secured perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And a walkway is somebody just walks past the camp limit sign and keeps going. and sentencing is different for them and everything.
Oh, okay.
And so they're considered, I was speaking with somebody up there, and they said they're level one and level two inmates.
Correct. That's to get minimum custody, they have to be level one or level two. And the classification process I briefly spoke about earlier, we go through the inmate's entire criminal history, and if he's had to escape from a secure perimeter, he can never go to fire camp. If he's had a walk away, he's not allowed to go off for 10 years. If he's ever had an arson or bomb building or anything like that, he's permanently excluded. If he's had a sex offense, he's permanently excluded. And then there's a lot of other offenses that we look at. We call it case-by-case basis. So we'll look at an arrest or a conviction that inmate had, and we'll try to determine, is he a higher threat to society if we let him out, minimum custody, and let him outside the gate. And so we make those decisions day after day on whether we're going to let these guys go out or not. And some of the things we take into consideration, if a young man did something kind of egregious, but now it's 10 or 15 years later, now he's in his 30s or 40s, and his in custody conduct or even his rest of history is minimal since then, we realize the inmate's probably changed his life a little bit, and we'll let that guy out. But if it was something recent that he'd done, then we still have to look out for public safety. We wouldn't let him go out there.
Mm-hmm.
We're always torn between the two needs, public safety and the need to have inmate firefighters out there.
Right.
The firefighters eat really well. They have more freedom out there. They get paid for inmate wages. They get paid an hour a day. I'm sorry, a dollar an hour from the time they leave the fire camp to respond to the fire till the time they come back. I've seen inmates parole a couple thousand dollars on their books, which gives them a little start when they get out in society.
Sure. Now, how many inmates, I don't know if you have these numbers, get into the fire business once they are paroled? Is that a tough switch for them? I mean, is it hard for them to get a job?
I can't give you exact numbers. I can give you a kind of a summary of the process. Current California Penal Code excludes ex-felons from getting a EMT certificate, emergency medical technician certificate. To work in a municipal fire department, everyone I know, you have to have EMT because they respond with ambulances.
Right.
So they're pretty much precluded from doing that. As far as working for wildland fire for either private contractor or for the federal government or for Cal Fire, they're not precluded. In one of my talks when I was the warden of Jamestown, I was meeting with some Cal Fire people, and I asked the guy, what is the highest rank that an ex-inmate's ever attained in your organization? And he told me he wasn't sure, but he knew currently of one ex-inmate that was a division chief, which a division chief would be comparable to a correction lieutenant in CDCR. They would be supervised up to 20 fire captains, and this was an ex-inmate had attained that. The other thing that most of the fire camps are standalone facilities out there, so they have their own sewer pond. Every camp that has one inmate that works with the Cal Fire staff on sewage and wastewater, and if they complete their course and their 2,000 hours of hands-on work, they're looking at walking into a $60,000 to $70,000 job in society, working at some municipal water treatment facility. That's one of those occupations right now where there's not enough people to fill the demand. I know of an inmate that paroled from one of our fire camps and went to work at the city of Davis as a wastewater sewer plant position. Walked into almost $100,000 a year job.
Wow.
Well, that's worth giving up a life of crime and more potential incarceration.
That's been my philosophy for the first half of my career. We warehoused inmates. We protected society. We put them in prison. And that, other than the fire camps, that's all we did. We started this rehabilitative push in the last few years, and that's why I sell it to staff. It's why I sell it to the public, is that it's much better to spend a little money on the inmate now and have him get out of prison and be in a productive member of society and help pay taxes and build roads and bridges than it is, well, you're at work, for him sneaking in your house and taking the stuff you worked for. And are they all going to be successes? Absolutely not. But to me, the effort's worth it. And of all the programs, Fire Camp teaches them work ethic and teamwork, and some of them learn trades out there. We have chainsaw mechanics, small engine repair guys. Every fire camp has guys that, the entire camp is run by inmate labor. The cooks, there's no state employee that cooks for the inmates. The inmates cook for themselves. They clean after themselves. They do the maintenance of the facility for the most part. Big maintenance jobs. Sometimes a contractor come in or Cal Fire may come in and do it for us, or staff from the prison would go out there and do it. The day-to-day maintenance stuff, a leaky faucet or a toilet clogged up or electrical short, the inmates go do that stuff.
I didn't know that.
No kidding.
So there's a lot of jobs that, I mean, they could train for in these fire camps and have something to do on the outside.
Correct.
Well, you could write him a recommendation because you've seen them perform, I mean, which is very different than, okay, come out of your cell, go to your art class, come back. I mean, how do you know what the guy's going to do when you let him loose? But you've actually seen them in the wild.
I can tell you that there's a process in the Department of Corrections. It's called the TCL, Cue Community Leave. And generally we do those when mother or father passes away and the inmate's security level is low, like minimum. We'll let them go. There'll be itinerary. We'll release them at a certain time. He'll go and attend the funeral, maybe the service or a little celebration afterwards, and then be back at a certain time. And then but we have done TCLs to community leave for inmates to go take exams, state exams at fire camp. So a correctional officer would take an inmate or two or three, just like anybody else applying for a state exam, go in wherever the exam was being held, drive them there, check them into the room, wait for them when they're done with the exam, put them back in a van, take them back to fire camp. I mean, that's rehabilitation, so that person is employable when he gets out of prison.
Yeah, no kidding.
I know there's a fair amount of private fire contractors out there. Do they operate out of those same camps, and does it give the inmate a opportunity to kind of network with those folks for when they get out to get a job with them?
No, they don't work out of the camps. Where they would run into those people would be actually out on fires. But I can tell you that most of those contractors would rather hire somebody with experience than somebody without experience.
Well, yeah. I mean, that would make all the sense in the world. You have people who have actually done that. And, you know, I think anybody who has paid attention at all realizes that a lot of times people wind up committing crimes because they've had, they made bad choices for starters, but, they had maybe a crappy upbringing and they didn't have people who taught them, work ethic and all those kinds of things. And this is an opportunity, if they want it, to be able to do that. I don't know. I just don't see it.
I don't see the downside.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I don't see the downside.
So I know, Aaron, I know we're coming up against Blake. And I've done what I can to sell the camp program and the inmate firefighters. When we get back, I'd like to talk about why CCC.
Yep.
Okay.
And we definitely want to get into why they're doing this. I mean, let's talk turkey. I mean, why are they doing this? I just a little spoiler alert in case people are thinking it's going to be boring. It's not going to be boring, actually. The Democrats in California actually consider inmate work crews some sort of weird form of slavery. I don't know. Hunter can confirm or deny when we come back. But
I'd also like to know what the ramifications of this are going to be.
Yeah, so they want to get rid of it. And how stupid is that? I mean, there's a lot of things we should get rid of. Most of it happens under the Capitol Dome in Sacramento. But instead, we're going to close the fire camps. Stupid. We'll talk about some of the money that's involved and what that's going to do for the citizens in California, which will be not a whole lot that's good. And it'll cost us all more, which is terrific, just a little bonus. We're going to take a fast break. We'll be back. Our guest is Hunter Angel. We are talking about the closure of the CCC up in Susanville, but kind of this idea of fire camps in general and what prison inmate crews, how it benefits society and the prisoners both. And that's it. So you can find all that information at wethepeopleradio.us.
Still.
They did a bad, bad thing. 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 You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break in two?
You are listening to a repeat performance from August of this year.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 1460.com.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
It's a bright new day. The sun is shining, the birds are singing, and there's never been a better day to try Mount Shasta spring water. Hi, I'm Bob the Drop. I come from a protected spring at the base of Mount Shasta. I'm bottled at the source. It doesn't get more cool and refreshing than that, and it's delivered right to your door. Yep, pure and simple, naturally the best. Start your bright new day by calling 1-800-922-6227 to order some of the best tasting water on the planet, Mount Shasta spring water.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
Hey, Northern California, this is Nigel Skeet. Join me and my friends every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. with the California Adventure District radio show, where we talk about all the amazing adventures to be had in our area, from climbing Mount Shasta, hiking the trails, kayaking, overlanding, and camping with Bigfoot. We have it all. California Adventure District. Less people, more adventure. Listen Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Today, Simpson University continues to provide a Christ-centered education graduating students with mature and infectious faith, critical competence, and a ready spirit to thrive as servant leaders around the world and at our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
When we catch a criminal, there's nothing we can do but play cops and robbers, cops and robbers.
some leftover songs when we interviewed the sheriff.
Nice.
I had a little selection in here. All right. So now that we figured out that inmate work crews are a good thing, it benefits society, it benefits the crews, and it's a very organized system that's been in play for quite some time. Now where?
So, Aaron, first thing I want to talk about is the California Penal Code section, which is law written in the state of California. And I want to paraphrase PC 2067. It talks about closing all contract facilities before state-owned facilities to take into consideration long-term investment in state-owned facilities and operating facilities, including previous investments. Well, there's currently a prison in California City in Southern California that has a contract facility. The state doesn't own it. There's state employees that work there, but it's by definition a contract facility. They pay a contract every year. And this isn't some obscure penal code that they may have forgot about. They passed this law in 2018. And so one of my contentions about CCC, I also make a case that it's not the best for the taxpayer to close CCC. And the numbers are stark. They're kind of boring, but there is a stark difference between forecast costs to keep CCC running and some of these other prisons. Some of these other prisons are well over $1 billion. And CCC's a third or half of that. So, and as a taxpayer, that's important to me. I no longer work for the department. All I care about is what's going to impact me directly. So it looks to us, and the city of Susanville did a request for a court injunction, and they cited that penal code section because that's something courts would look at. And there's also another penal code section that's applicable, and it's the penal code 50.03.7, and it's the language in that says prioritize closure of prisons with relatively high operational costs. And I can show you that CCC per inmate that they house is the lowest in the state. So first of all, they're, in my opinion, they're violating the law. Second of all, the Legislative Analyst Office puts out reports, and their function is they're supposed to serve as eyes and ears to the legislature to ensure the executive branch is implementing policy in a cost-effective manner. So they put out reports, and they make comments on the budget, make recommendations to the legislature. What they have a report out, and what I'm going to do throughout this is I'm not going to use current numbers because the Department of Corrections has quit sending inmates to the California Correctional Center.
And why is that?
Well, because they're going to close it.
Mm-hmm.
And they started reducing numbers before the announcement. So if I'm looking at today's numbers, the cost to house inmates at California Correction Center, when they've reduced that population by 1,000 or 1,200 inmates already, that cost is going to go up significantly. But if I go back to June of 2020, which is the numbers I'm using, before they were on the radar to close, I can make a case that they house inmates cheaper than anybody else.
It's not that, so, and I'm always kind of in the back of my head and thinking about, you know, questions people might be asking. And so I guess one thing people might assume is they don't have people to send there, that the prison population is actually low, but that's not actually the case.
So they have reduced the prison population from, I'm ballparking, from 120,000 to 90,000, 95,000 in the last year and a half. But my case for why CCC is, there's other, CCC on their main site, not excluding fire camps, still houses 2,400 level 1 and 2 inmates. They can't go outside the gate. Those inmates I talked about before, and and I've missed a couple exclusions. If the inmate has bee sting bites, he can't go out and be on a fire crew. If he has asthma, he can't be on a fire crew. So those inmates and inmates with preclusions from going out there, like sex offenses and stuff like that, are still housed in the prison. And there's other level one and two inmates housed in dormitory settings, just like the old side of CCC, where those institutions are cost a lot more to operate. Their future cost to increase infrastructure or to get an infrastructure up to code is significantly higher than CCC, like $500 million more,
wow.
$0.6 billion more for one prison. So, but I wanted to reference this legislative analyst office report from February 28th of 2020. And they're giving the guidance to the legislature, and they said states should consider closing prisons with high operating costs and or infrastructure needs. CCC, so I'd like to explain. So there's 35 prisons, and there's the original 12. Of the original 12, CCC is the next to the lowest on future infrastructure costs. It's estimated to fix everything wrong with CCC would be $503 million, which is $500 million. That's significant. But when you're looking at the CRC that is $1.16 billion, you're looking at double the cost, and they provide the same service to the taxpayers of the state of California. The legislative analyst office also said closure of prisons with specialized missions would have significant operational implications. The fire camp system is a specialized mission. I tried to articulate that. I know that a Department of Corrections spokesperson would probably tell you, well, Sierra Conservation Center is still that void. Well, they are 260 miles further south from California Correctional Center, and they're 8 hours and 12 minutes from one of the northern camps. I don't know how you can support someplace where it takes you a day to get there.
Yeah, no kidding.
And the one prison I missed in the CRC, which is the California Rehabilitative Center in Norco, California, right in that report on 2/28/2020, there was in the budget there was $5.9 million for repairs to CRC. They actually called out that one prison. That's the only prison they called out in that report. Is you need to speak to that money. If you're going to, or you don't spend that money if you're going to close CRC. That was the only one of all 35 prisons they even mentioned potentially closing. That was the one that, when I was working 20 months ago, was on the chopping block because of the poor infrastructure.
I would think in light of the California fire situation, which they don't seem to be able to figure out, They should be investing more money in CCC and increasing those facilities, manpower and the number of facilities. I mean, does that make sense?
It does. The amount of inmates that we call grade eligible firefighters based on physical fitness and custody has shrunk, because those are the same inmates that we take out to fire camp that they're releasing early, for the most part.
Right.
And they've turned a lot of their crimes into misdemeanors, so they're not going to prison anyway.
Right. And then part of what that legislative analyst office said is talking about money we've already spent. CCC has spent $58 million at that prison the last 2 years. In 2012, they put the new sewer pond in. That, the sewer pond itself for High Desert NCC was $28 million. I want to get into this later. They're not going to close CCC completely. They're going to leave remnants of it behind. So there's some things they can't shut down. But referencing back to the LOA report from 2/28/20, they recommend to the legislature direct CDCR to rank prisons for closure based on cost avoidance, operational needs, and the ability to serve the inmates' needs. So over a year and a half ago, they asked them to come out with a list. And if it exists, nobody I know or myself have ever seen a list. And I will tell you why I believe that's so. If they come out with a list, then it takes away the discretion of the governor's office to eliminate the prisons that he chooses to eliminate, not the one that's best for the taxpayers, or maybe even the one CDCR itself would support closing. And I'm gonna drift off here before I get in a bunch of boring numbers. I'll tell you this, Lassen County had the highest per capita signatures of registered voters on the recall Newsom campaign of any county in the state.
I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
It's also, we had a, I say we, because I live in the community, I don't work at the prison anymore, but we had 3 COVID cases in this county well into the COVID thing. And they transferred 120-some inmates from San Quentin to California Correctional Center, and COVID ran rampant through that prison and through the community. And a lot of people were very vocal about that and brought, there was newspaper articles done on the B and the LA Times, brought discredit on the governor's office. So we haven't been his best friend.
No.
And so this, in my opinion, and I'm only speaking for myself, not the organization, I think this is purely political. So I want to get into some numbers for you. And I know numbers are boring.
No, but they're really important. Are you going to talk about the amount of money that's been invested in the prison lately?
I want to first talk about the money that's forecast to be invested through the Legislative Analyst Office. And they talk about in their 2020-2021 budget. At the time of that report, CCC had the 6th largest population of all 35 prisons. And they were right behind number four, five, and six were all right there within 100 inmates. I mentioned this before, for the repairs to the original 12 prisons, CCC's at the 11th lowest. Hmm. San Quentin's forecast repairs are at $1.6 billion. CMC is $1.55. Soledad's $1.3. And the two prisons that I really think serve the exact same purpose as CCC, except for they don't have inmate firefighters, CIM is going to be $1.2 and CRC is $1.1. And CCC's is $500 million. So it's less than half of that. There's actually 2 prisons of the new prison construction that happened in the 80s and 90s that their forecast repairs are going to cost more than the prison that was built in 1963, and those are Pleasant Valley and Sentinella. They're respectively $0.6 and $0.5 billion. So, I mean, we're talking about billions, not millions here. We're talking about you could build a prison for those prices, but they're going to keep those open and close one that has the smallest price tag, basically. And I'd mentioned earlier, the price of housing the inmate at CCC, and this is, I took these numbers from before they reduced the population. It's $41,000 a year for inmate at CCC. And I realize it, and I'm not going to try to blow smoke up anybody's butt, that minimum custody inmates are cheaper to house. The staffing ratio is cheaper. We have less staff per inmates or way more inmates per staff. But I'm not comparing apples and oranges. I'm comparing them to CCC or to CRC and CIM, California Institution for Men. Both of them down there in Chino Valley, which is a staunch Democratic stronghold. They have Democratic assemblymen, Democratic state senators, and there's no way, if you look at the numbers, that you could actually make a legitimate case that CCC is going to be a better, based on cost, a better solution to reducing a prison.
Right.
And in my old home, SCC, the Sierra Conservation Center, which is our sister institution, and I've worked there 3 years, and I love the place, and I love the staff. But when I got there, there's a process where every September we put in for capital outlay money. This is money that's not in the institution budget. It's for major fixes that only the state can afford. And in that capital outlay, They brought me a document that only had four items on it. One of those items, the price tag was $95 million. And I read that thing, and I called the manager and says, what is this? He says, well, we need the roof space, we need cleaning in the dorms, and need asbestos removal, blah, blah, blah. I said, nobody's going to ever give you $95 million to fix that stuff. You break that down into 20 different projects. And they used to complain that CCC had cooling, and they didn't. The reason CCC had cooling is they submitted these things year after year with reasonable price tags. We don't have to fix the whole prison in one sure. failed sweep. We're going to fix this today, and we're going to fix that tomorrow, and we're going to fix that next year. And over a period of time, CCC is what it is now. And so they changed their methodology, and they broke those down into about 15 different projects that had reasonable price tags that we could actually try to sell someone. The other thing, and I'm not picking on SEC because it's not my place to recommend what they close. I'm just saying CCC, they missed the bullseye on this one. And but CCC has full generator power. When the power goes out, the prison runs normal. Every single computer terminal works. All the lights work. Air conditioning works.
Well, that seems like something we would want to hang on to, especially in California with our power problems. We're going to come right back. We've got to take a quick break for some news. Hopefully it's informative. And we'll be back with our guest, Hunter Angel. We're talking about prison today. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You are listening to a repeat performance of We the People from August of this year.
And I know it's gonna be 6243 CT Reading.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. President Biden goes before the United Nations this coming week to address the pandemic and human rights abuses. He will address the General Assembly on Tuesday. It is called For the People Act, but the Heritage Foundation says the House voting rights legislation does nothing positive for voters. Legal fellow Zach Smith says it includes provisions such as the gutting of voter ID laws. He says two versions of the House voting rights legislation in big trouble over in the Senate.
There's H.R. 1 for the People Act. I think that is dead in the water in the Senate, it looks like. There's H.R. 4, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. I think that also faces an uphill battle in the Senate.
Two people have been injured. Several homes have suffered damages when a military aircraft went down this morning in a suburb of Fort Worth, Texas. Officials say both crewmen were able to eject. One, though, was burned by power lines. Another landed in a tree. No injuries reported on the ground. Also at townhall.com, Massachusetts fining Mass Mutual.
The company has been accused of failing to supervise an employee whose online cheerleading of GameStop's stock helped launch the frenzy that shook Wall Street earlier this year. The settlement centers on the actions of Keith Gill, an employee at a MassMutual subsidiary from April 2019 until January 2021. Under the nickname Roaring Kitty, Gill sent numerous tweets and created hours of YouTube videos championing GameStop and backed up his support with big personal trades. Regulators say MassMutual failed to follow policies meant to flag such actions. MassMutual neither admitted nor denied the regulators' findings. John Scott reporting.
More on these stories at townhall.com.
Tell me why Relief Factor is so successful in lowering or eliminating pain. I'm often asked that question. Pete and Seth Talbot, the father and son, founders of Relief Factor, tell me they believe our bodies were designed to heal. That's right, designed to heal, and now I agree. The doctors who formulated Relief Factor for Pete and Seth selected the four best ingredients, 100% drug-free ingredients that each help your body deal with inflammation. That's correct. Each of the four ingredients deal with inflammation on a different metabolic pathway. That right there. Approaching your pain from four different angles may very well be why so many Americans find such wonderful pain relief. If you have back pain, shoulder, neck, hip, knee, or foot pain from exercise or even just getting older, you must order the three-week quick start now. Discount it to only $19.95 to see if it will work for you too. I think it could. Give your body what it needs to heal itself. Go to relieffactor.com, call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com.
Microsoft officially allowing consumers to ditch passwords for their personal accounts.
The tech giant created a passwordless sign-in for users, meaning they will no longer need to enter a password in order to gain entry into a Microsoft account. Since March, the company has offered passwordless sign-in for commercial accounts. Now any user will be able to use the Microsoft Authenticator app, Windows Hello, a security key, or a verification code that will be sent to a phone or email in order to sign in to any Microsoft app or service. It will be rolled out over the coming weeks. Patrick Frost reporting.
In California, a woman arrested and charged with DUI after allegedly dragging her 8-year-old daughter 300 feet. Police say the little girl and a bystander were simply trying to stop the woman from driving away drunk. The child was not seriously hurt. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. Nationwide average for a gallon of gas up 2 cents to $3.19.
According to AAA, that ties early August peaks and matches a 7-year high. The auto group says much of the rise is due to impacts from hurricanes Ida and Nicholas on oil and refinery production. Approximately 30% of crude production in the Gulf of Mexico remains shuttered. Around the country, the highest price found in California at $4.39 a gallon. The cheapest pump price was in Texas at $2.80. Rhonda Rockster reporting.
Things are just a bit iffy right now on Spain's Atlantic Ocean island of La Palma. A volcano there erupting after a week-long buildup of seismic activity, prompting authorities to speed up evacuations for more than 1,000 nearby residents. Authorities say some lava flows are now creeping toward isolated homes. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
You are listening to a repeat performance of We the People from August of this year.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour. It's Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape is everything John Deere. Go up and see them. You need parts, service. They can fix all brands tractors. And they've got a pretty good inventory in the lot right now, so go up and get you a new tractor. And they're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right between Oasis and Pine Grove exits. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So today is August 1st, 2021. We are discussing prison, specifically the closure of the California Correctional Center up in Susanville, the slated closure. How about that? We'll just call it that, the proposed closure. Let's make it sound more temporary than it is. And another great idea from Gavin Newsom, just in case anybody was curious where that idea started. And there is, you know, our guest is Hunter Angel. He's been a warden. I've got his bio posted at wethepeopleradio.us. I want to ask you, though, Hunter, before we get into whichever phase we're moving to now, the governor, it seems like things are speeding up. So it seems like the governor kind of wants to get this done. Now, he's on target for a recall on September 15th, so, you know, 6 weeks from now. He'll be on the voting, you know, on the voters' block there for a recall. You think this has everything to do with just your opinion. Do you think getting this past the tipping point is a goal in case he gets tossed out?
So what I've told everybody is, so my opinion on that is that the only way we're going to save CCC is to recall Governor Newsom. We can delay the process through court filings and stuff like that, but my personal opinion is we're not going to be successful in the end. The judges in the state have been appointed by Democrats, so we're not going to win that fight either.
Yeah.
Our Northern California counties are represented by some conservative folks. Are they stepping up and trying to get this thing reversed at all? Do you know? Are they working on it?
Well, Brian Dahle is our state senator, and his wife Megan is our assemblyman. And I was at a town hall with YCCC. And he basically said with the supermajority of Democrats, his hands are tied. There's not much he can do. He expressed frustration. And, of course, the audience expressed frustration with him because of that. But the reality is, I believe there's only 9 Republican state senators in the state.
Right. And
he is from Lassen County, so you would think he would have
right. –
I'm not saying he doesn't have interest, but he did articulate how he has a lot of issues throughout his district. And sometimes you have to save your political clout for one you think you can win.
Well, he's always expressed his ability to reach across the aisle and work with the other side. And I'm just kind of surprised that we haven't really got much of that done this time.
I'm not going to say he hasn't tried. His presentation to the group at the town hall a couple weeks ago was one of frustration and throwing his hands up that he just wasn't going to be successful.
That's too bad. Did he actually, I mean, I know probably not in this many words, but did he actually say it wasn't really worth expending the political capital?
No, Aaron, he didn't say that. He articulated several other really pressing issues in other areas within the district and asked the audience, which one do I make a priority? Well, he was talking to an audience of people wanting to say CCC. And I get where he's at. He's not going to get everything he's asking for. And I don't want to put words in the man's mouth, but it didn't encourage the crowd.
Right.
I'll say that.
Well, this is kind of a big deal. I mean, California's burning up, and to lower the fire, that just makes no sense. Of course, there's a lot of things in California that don't make any sense, so just throw that all in the same basket.
That's no longer criteria.
Yeah.
The Department of Corrections is going to tell you to that response. Their response is going to be, it's going to be a seamless transition with another institution taking over that responsibility. I want to share something else with you about inmate firefighters. So the California Department of Corrections contracts with some counties for county inmates that meet the criteria to come out and fight fires. We call them boarders because they're from a county, but we're boarding them in CDCR. And I've mentioned CCC and SEC are sister institutions. They're identical. The only difference is CCC has an outside facility, 380-man bed facility outside the perimeter of the prison, and that's where we train our firefighters. SEC does it inside the prison. So the inmate boarders from the county, state law precludes them from going inside the secure perimeter of prison, but they can function on the outside like they do with CCC. So right now, one of the biggest contracts is with LA County, undoubtedly. SCC will pick up the inmates from LA County and transport them up to their prison, and then CCC will come get them, bring them to California Correctional Center, train them as firefighters, and then transport them back down to CCC so they can go fight fire in LA County. That whole process will be gone. That population, there's contracts with Shasta County. Last time I looked, and it's been 2 years, there's only like 3 or 4 inmates from Shasta County that were part of the program. But because state law precludes those inmates from coming inside a secure perimeter, and SCC doesn't have an outside facility, don't know how they're going to facilitate that. We've been doing it for 10 years, though.
Right. Holy cow. It's
it just kind of gets dumber and dumber. No wonder you can't explain it.
I know you guys want to take this. I don't know where you want to take this, but I'd like to finish the point before the break about the infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when I talk about generator comes on automatically when the power goes out, there's a 5-second delay. CCC and High Desert both have that capability, and they use their own institutional funds for the most part to put that infrastructure in because of power outages during snowstorms and stuff like that. Well, the dynamics that have changed now is PG&E does routine shutoffs down in the Central Valley where SCC is situated. SCC's power, when the power goes out, their generated power only provides emergency power, which is minimal for lights and some electric sockets and some refrigeration units and stuff like that. But we are the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. You can't run rehabilitative programs when there's no lights on in the, or you just have minimal emergency lighting. You can't healthcare encounters. The department's been sued, and healthcare is one of the biggest, most costly things we do. But when we had a power outage at Sierra when I was there, we had to go rent. We're trying to rent generators with the rest of the community because the power was out and it doesn't usually go out there now. But it's the new normal. The PG&E doing their role in shutouts.
Right.
We had to rent generators to run refrigeration units that had inmate medication in them. They're way behind CCC in the infrastructure. They're trying to get new roofs. CCC has new roofs. They're trying to get cooling in their dorms, which they should because it's 10 degrees warmer down there day to day than it is at CCC. But CCC has cooling in their dorms. So there's a lot more money that's going to have to go in to bring SCC up to the CCC standards, but you're going to close CCC. And I'm not even proposing to close SEC. I don't think it's not a good selection either. But I can make a case of compare face-to-face CCC to at least five other prisons with similar missions, except they don't have camps, but they house level one, two, and three inmates, and show you how CCC has historically done it cheaper, is doing it cheaper, and in the future will do it cheaper because they don't need as many repairs as the rest of the department does.
Mm-hmm. See, that just none of that, I mean, that's where you have to come back to, it's got to be up, you know, politically targeted at the county, because from a logistics standpoint, it makes no sense. So people might think, oh, well, you know, you're going to save on all the cost of employees. No, you're not going to do that either, because they're all being transferred, right? For the most part.
Well, the vast majority of them is. I'll make this case, too. If you're concerned about the employees, there's three prisons in the Chino Valley. If you close one of those two prisons that cost more than CCC and fulfill the same function, they got two places to go to. The employees at CCC has one place to go to, High Desert State Prison. There's already been, and these are rumors that are pretty well substantiated because of people I know, 240 people have already put their transfers in. 140 houses went on the market in this community the very first week that the announcement came out back in April.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that tells you what's going to happen to that community.
And I don't have a dog in that fight. I'm on a pension. I'm not going to sell my house. None of that is going to impact me, but it's going to impact the community immensely.
So you're relocating all these people, so there's no cost savings there. You're costing them a lot because they're going to have to live in a place with a much higher cost of living, provided they can find a house. I mean, we're having this big housing shortage, so we're going to create a bunch of open houses in Susanville, but no jobs. So people won't move there. Yeah.
So there won't be a cost savings regardless of which prison, because prisons have vacancies. So as these staff move around, mm-hmm. the prison they go to is going to have their operating budget is going to be the same as it was before, and CCCs will diminish significantly. They're not going to do a cold shutdown. Their term is a warm shutdown. There's an inmate, well, there's a fire camp on grounds. That's going to continue to function, which is good. There's every prison or every group of two prisons has an inmate firehouse where inmates actually are trained in structured fires in case a prison catches on fire.
Oh.
And that firehouse has always been attached to CCC, and it'll be switched over to High Desert, but it's still going to function. And the heating for those two facilities I just mentioned comes from a boiler house, an old, antiquated 1960s boiler house that has to be staffed 24/7, 365. So you're still going to have at least five staff members that make close to $100,000 a year working at that prison just to keep that boiler house going.
Huh. That's efficient.
I'm sure.
Gosh.
There may be an effort down the road to tie it into the High Desert boiler house, but now we're talking millions more dollars to try to tie that in. or relocate the firehouse. They just built a brand new kitchen for the firehouses and the minimum support. So that was part of that $58 million I said they put into the prison last few years. And they're going to have to run the sewer pond. So the way it works right now, High Desert is on the uphill side. So they pump the water out of the ground, and they're responsible for that, maintaining it, all the costs associated with it. And then CCC is on downhill, so they're responsible for the sewer pond that services both institutions. That cost isn't going away either. So there's still it's not going to be completely shut down. And then I mentioned earlier that the cell housing that was activated in 1988 it'd be like the newest prison facility that's been shut down. There's rumors that they're going to incorporate that in the High Desert and let High Desert run that. But that's going to be after they move all the staff out of the community, if it happens, because it's, like I said, it's just a rumor, but it makes sense because it's new infrastructure. And then they're going to bring 40, 50, 60 staff back to fill the positions on that facility after they've already relocated. That doesn't make any sense to me either. Mm-hmm. And I want to clarify, that is a rumor, but it's a rumor that in my mind makes a lot of sense, because if I was running the department, I would keep that up, because it's a new design in prison.
Yeah, and to get back to the actual number of inmates in the state, they're not sending people to CCC, but it's not because they don't have people to send there. It's just because they're not sending them there. If they do, it'll blow their trajectory, I guess, toward closure. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, they just quit sending inmates there. But through attrition, the number's going to continue to drop with inmates paroling or transferring for legitimate transfer reasons, and it'll make their job, as they get close to that June 2020 date, it'll make their job easier to get rid of the rest of the inmates.
Idiots.
They closed one. So there's two level 1-2 facilities at that prison. There's a level 3 facility, and then there's a facility outside the prison that I mentioned where they train the firefighters. They've already closed one of the two facilities. They just moved all the inmates off of what they call A facility and put them on B facility. And so part of that, one-third of that prison is vacant right now.
Doesn't that make the B facility a little bit overcrowded?
I don't know what the pop is over there right now. Their population is about 750 inmates right now, and the design capacity is 905. So they've effectively reduced the population at the whole prison by not sending anybody there.
All right. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, and letting them go. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest, Hunter Angel. We're talking about prison closure in California because, you know, obviously we just don't have any crime here. When you watch the news, it's all fake.
Yeah.
All that crime you're seeing, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's not really happening. It's what is it, CGI? Yeah, that must be it. Barbara Boxer really wasn't mugged. Oh, wait, no, she was. She was. I'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at Bill's fired. At We the People Radio.
.us.
You're still fired.
Welcome to the Hotel California.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Redding.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and heard online at KCNR1460.com. Tune in to Mark Levin, Dave Ramsey, and Ben Shapiro. Plus, don't miss our local shows, including Free Fire Radio on KCNR.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Mirrors on the ceiling, you think champagne on ice?
and she said, "We are all just prisoners here of our own device. And in the master's chambers, they're gathered for the feast. They stab it with their stealing eyes, but they just can't kill the beast."
Inappropriate.
That is just not a scary shower song. Just, you're going to ruin it for everybody next time they hear that song. Now.
It just seemed like such a good
is
prison
wrong
song.
Wrong with you? Good Lord.
We've used it on our NSA shows, and it's like, oh my God, it works for prison too.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad we
love
got
it. We could ruin a good song for everyone. Oh my gosh. So, Hunter, we haven't fully explored probably the all the revenue to the city and the loss of jobs and all those kinds of things that are going to hit that area. And I don't think people really, you know, it's like anything else. People who don't live in areas that have fire don't realize how much we need all these things. People who don't live in rural areas don't understand when you take something like that out of a community that there's this huge ripple effect that happens. You want to kind of hit some of that?
Yeah. Chico State University did a study on what the closure of CCC would, what the impact would be to the community, and they said it would be a $134 million reduction in income, not to the city and county, but to the people that work here and then pay taxes on that money, and businesses that support the prison, and businesses that support the employees of the prison. That's significant for a small town. Susanville, if you look at the city limit sign, it says there's 30,000 people in Susanville. Well, I'd mentioned early on that in 1992, the citizens of the county voted to build a second prison. In their negotiations with the state, the state allowed them to annex the two prison populations into the city. So they get tax dollars back from the state of California based on the inmate population also. So that's going to get reduced in half with the closure. The tax dollars that the citizens pay, the devaluation of price of housing is going to impact property taxes for the city and county. Basically, you're taking there's about 1,200 employees roughly at that prison. So even if some transferred to High Desert, that meant some people from High Desert left to make room for them. That's 1,200 families in this community that are, for the most part, law-abiding. So with less revenue, you're going to have less police, you're going to have less sheriffs, less firefighters inside the city of Susanville. But if you're taking out a law-abiding element of the community and making them leave.
And they all pay taxes.
They all pay taxes. And what's left is your homeless and the people that you have repetitive problems with. Law enforcement having to deal with.
Terrific.
With less funding to do it with.
Just out of curiosity, I know that when they put in Pelican Bay over there, that's obviously a different level of prison. And so I'm curious. I know they had a lot of families of inmates moved into the area, so it really changed the demographic of their town. The level one and two, I don't know anything about prison. I'm guessing they're there longer, and maybe their families don't move to be near them. Maybe they just write them letters or whatever.
That's true. I can tell you based on visiting numbers. At CCC, the visiting numbers are significantly less than the numbers at High Desert, which is a level three and four prison, high security, So the you're right. They go to prison for 1 to 3 years, and they're coming home right away. People aren't going to relocate to follow them, so they don't become members of the community. High desert, different story. They don't even travel. A lot of the inmates at CCC don't get inmate visitation because they're going to be out of fire camp in a short period of time, and the family would rather wait. It's like at a fire camp. I'm sorry for stuttering, but I'm trying to find my words. At a fire camp, the visiting area is like a city park. There are picnic benches and barbecues, MHUs, and shade trees, and a swing set for the kids to play on. And it's not a prison environment. So a lot of people just opt out not to come and visit while they're at the institution. Wait till they get to fire camp if they're going to fire camp.
Oh wow, that's kind of an unseen benefit.
I wouldn't want to bring my 3-year-old to a prison, but I might take him to a camp that looks like a park, and there's some guy walking around with a uniform on.
Sure. Well, that's kind of that's another incentive to become part of that whole system.
That whole program, yep. So the impact is going to be immense. Until it happens, we don't really know. But I want to go back to the loyalty the department or the county has shown to the department. We saw we as residents, I'm not speaking for everybody, but we saw that the logging industry was going away. So they jumped on the opportunity to get a clean industry and provide, you know, good paying jobs. And a lot of communities didn't do that. They didn't do it. They voted those proposed prisons down. And in the case of Lassen County, they didn't. They jumped all over it. So, Ray Charles can see it. This is political.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. It's pretty obvious that you guys are being, you're being singled out. Tell me this. There are unions that represent probably I don't know if it works like a lot of other things where you have, you know, unions for management and union for kind of rank and file or whatever. But the union that represents the bulk of the people that will be affected, are they being helpful?
In California Civil Service, they're broke down by job occupation. So the custody staff are bargaining unit 6. There's support staff or SEIU, I think, the bargaining unit 1. Those are the two big ones. The president of SEIU tried to pledge $1 million to help us out on our campaign. He got shot down by his board. The unit 6, the custody staff, they just gave $1 or $2 million to basically 1.7 to Newsom to defend himself on the recall effort. Now the local chapter at California Correctional Center, themselves, they're doing everything they can to save the prison, but they're just one unit out of 36 or 35 bargaining units.
So the guys that should be helping them, that should be standing with them to help them save their institution and their jobs and, you know, their homes and all that kind of stuff, and let their kids stay in the schools that they're in, and they decided that they'd jump in with the governor that's probably going to be recalled.
And
yes,
the one responsible for shutting them down.
Yeah.
So what they did was they entered an agreement. They entered an agreement with the governor that when the pandemic started and the forecast was that we were going to be billions in the hole, to take a reduction in wages and stuff, and then get a subsequent raise in 2022, I believe, when this was all over. They've doubled down on it. So when the state reported they had $60 billion surplus, and that's a conservative number, they get reinstated their voluntary pay cuts, give them a pay raise, and they know that if Newsom wins, they're going to have to negotiate with him for their next contract bid. So they're hedging their bets that they're going to, that if Newsom wins, they're going to get a lucrative contract next contract negotiations.
Mm.
Wow. And what recourse do the people in these unions have? Just out of curiosity, well, since I'm not in the union.
They have what's called fair share. They can still have the money deducted from their check each month, but if it's not go to the union, they can send it to a nonprofit. And that's their recourse. But then at the same time, specifically Bargain Unit 6 is the one I'm talking about. Those are peace officers, and if they either get in trouble where they're facing adverse action for something that happened at work, or they're facing litigation from the inmate population, the union does provide representation. So most of them are afraid to distance themselves from the union.
Right.
Yeah, when I was in Pelican Bay, they were getting sued because one of the inmates' cookies was broken. And with his lunch, he kept getting broken cookies at lunch. And
you never got any broken cookies when you were.
I was talking about you, Bill. I was just trying to keep it quiet.
No, that was you.
I was just trying.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you, litigation's real. As a retired warden, I was named in every lawsuit that came across for 2 years. I was in Jamestown, and I'm still 20 months later, still working with the deputy attorney generals on some of these lawsuits.
You broke all the cookies.
I wish it was just cookies.
Yeah, when they told us that, we were like, "What? Broken cookies?" We're like, "Are you kidding? Is this is this secret prison talk?" They're like, "No, broken cookies."
Yeah.
Oh my God, those people need less time in the library. They need more time at fire camp.
So I wanted to touch on something real quick. There was
sure.
an employee at CCC that wrote the department for a Freedom of Information Act request. And a response was given by the Department of Corrections. And on the surface, you don't know anything. It kind of sounds good. But there's a lot of things in here that are inaccurate. In fact, the things that they talk about, they're justifying the closure of CCC because during the COVID-19 pandemic, it appeared the virus has spread more easily in dormitories than cells environment. Well, the prison life that I articulated costs more to run, going to cost more in the future, have dormitory settings. SCC. Part of their response was the low occupancy rate at the prison was only 79% in April. Well, they'd already started, they quit sending inmates there before the announcement in April. So they created that statistic for themselves. They've done this. They talk about retention, and it's hard to keep staff at this prison. And they have attachments and graphs, and they cite that in this response. And see vacancy rate at 17.5 at this spot in time, February 1st. And there was 8 prisons with a higher vacancy rate. Some of them in suburban communities like New Folsom and CSP SAC. So it's ironic that they try to spin these numbers, but they don't have a justification. Operating cost per bed capacity. CCC was the lowest. And they get that as an attachment out while they're closing CCC.
Yeah.
This thing doesn't make sense.
Now, even the things they're using for justification don't quite add up. And
I'm not an attorney, but I'm sure an attorney is going to base this on the penal code sections that say closure contract facilities before you close your existing infrastructure, your prison that you actually own. And like I said, California City is still running. And that's I don't know how you would argue that in court if it could ever get to court. They also mentioned how many cadets they had to send to CCC to keep it full. And they were number 9. They're using this as their argument, but they got the... As a scale of 1 to 30, they got the 9th most cadets. So there was 8 prisons, they got more cadets than they did. Mm-hmm. Out of the Correctional Officers Academy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. San Quentin, they got 200. San Quentin got 480. San Quentin is the albatross, but they will never close San Quentin because that's what death row is, and all those court cases are heard in Marin County.
Yeah.
And the logistics of changing those cases or being sued by all those attorneys representing the death row inmates They don't want to even open that can of worms.
Although it's in a spectacular location, and from a real estate standpoint, I'm sure somebody's rubbing their hands together wishing that would happen.
Highest per cost inmate of any prison in the state.
Oh, it's got to be. It's in a spectacular location. I mean, you come across a bridge, you're like, what the heck is it? Oh, my God, that's San Quentin.
It's beautiful. Climate's nice.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got to take a quick break. Before we go, though, I had gotten a little note here that the staff relocation and the housing losses mean, you know, foreclosures, rental losses, all those things to the market in the Susanville area. But this other note here, correctional officers make $80,000 to $100,000 per year. And these are the people who coach high school sports, Little League, and all those things in the community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you think about the shopping dollars and all those different things, but you also think about the volunteer hours. These are people who volunteer in the community and have skills.
Well, when they leave, the kids leave with them. So, you know,
maybe.
The whole thing is.
But you lose a lot of quality people out of your community. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. So we'll take a couple of minutes to all be annoyed and frustrated, and we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Good job.
Who's to say I can't do everything, but I can try? And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I find with them.
You are listening to an encore performance of We the People from August of this year.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR 1460.com.
Take a stroll down Memory Lane at Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage. Whether you're looking for tools from the past, vintage clothing, collectibles, jewelry, or something that just reminds you of the good old days, you can find it at Memory Lane. Those special shabby chic and vintage style items are seen in every nook and cranny. So what are you waiting for? Sure, you can check out their Facebook page, but it's a lot more fun to explore the past and find your treasure. 1665 Pine Street in Reading. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Play our pro football season picks promotion at Wind River Resort and Casino. It's a fun, easy, and fully automated pick'em-style football promotion. Simply swipe your River Club card, make your picks, and collect a receipt with your own weekly choices. Plus, prior week results and year-to-date standings. Top weekly picks win a share of $500. Top season final winners win a share of $5,000. For official rules and details, log on to WindRiver.com. Football is better at the river.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at KCNR1460.com. Join Sue McClain weekday mornings from 6 to 7 for the Sue McClain News Hour, where you'll hear the up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bach. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, equal opportunity critics. From noon to 3, learn how to get out of debt with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday nights, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal, local history, North State Now, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune in to Ben Shapiro. your local downtown radio station, KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere, Ag, and Turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
I expected to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit. My family.
Playing with my daughter, I felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
This old man and me, we're at the bar and we having us some beers and swapping out on cares, talking politics, blonde and redhead chicks, old dogs and new tricks and habits we ain't kicked. We talked about God's grace and all the hell we raised. And then I heard the old man say, God is great, beer is good, and people are crazy.
And there you have it, the summation.
In closing.
I mean, really, what more can you say? Oh, Hunter, what the heck? Okay, so for all the people out there that are super frustrated and would like to actually help, just before we run out of time and don't get to that part, is there anything regular people can do? I'm assuming if they live in another area of California and are represented by somebody who thinks this is a bright idea, they should be pounding the phone lines?
Yes. The our state senators or assemblymen are on board. So calling one of the dollies isn't going to help.
No.
Go to keepccc.org or yccc.org, those two websites. Stay abreast of the information. September 14th, please get out and vote. Bring your family, take your neighbors, get friends out. We need to vote on September 14th. It doesn't just impact this issue, but the state as a whole.
Yeah, and God knows that dumpster fire needs to stop burning.
I know we're jumping around now, but I wanted to share something that might be of interest to some of the listeners. So we have 9 prisons in Central Valley, and you've probably heard of Valley Fever. So based on a fungus in the soil, certain people get extremely sick, and those prisons all have that fungus in the soil. So inmates are tested for their susceptibility. Did I say that right?
That's a
fever. And there's a lot it hinders the Department of Corrections on how they're going to house inmates.
Huh.
And a lot of the inmates that end up at CCC can't be housed at one of those 9. So we're just limited to 9 prisons. And I've been told that by a doctor at CCC that the susceptibility to Valley Fever has a lot to do with the pigmentation of your skin. The darker your pigmentation, the more susceptible you are. There's exceptions to every rule, but that's the generality.
Hmm.
So,
hmm.
Anyways, I just thought that might be of interest to some people that we cited 9 prisons in an area where a high percentage of our inmates can't even be housed. So
that's crazy. And for people out of the area, I mean, they call the other... They call the level 3 and 4 prison High Desert because that's where you guys are. You're in the High Desert. I mean, you're down the road from Sierra Army Depot where they store things that come back from war zones, like, I mean, clothing. things like that, things that have to be stored in a super dry environment. You have very low humidity. You're not heavily forested in a lot of that area. And you have a very different climate than the Central Valley of California. I never even thought about that.
And High Desert's the number one employer, the biggest employer in the county. The CCC is the second, and the Sierra Army Depot is number three. Mm-hmm. Those are the three primary. We're a county seat, so we have all the government offices here, from Forest Service, BLM, Cal Fire. So we have all that. But the primary employers are the two prisons and the Sierra Army Depot.
Wow. So on the prison side, you have to figure most people don't deal with that at all. If they're lucky and they don't marry the wrong people, or have relatives who go wayward, what do people not know about this system that they really should, in order to put it in context with this issue?
So, what I would say as a department, the rehabilitation, we look at ourselves as part of public safety, and no different than the officer that arrests somebody on the streets, or the courts that send them away to prison. We're just the final leg, where we try to turn out a better citizen than we receive. And so there's penal code sections that say if they have if they test lower than a 9 reading level, we have to enroll them in school. We have school, we have GED testing, high school diplomas, we have vocational training, so we can, these are guys that can't go to camp. Vocational trades, so we can teach them to learn a life skill, so when they get out, they could be employable. We have rehabilitative programs. A lot of those are human leg. I can tell you that my last couple of years at High Desert and then at Jamestown, I would stay late a couple of nights a month, and I'd go sit through those programs. And it seemed like I was the first time in a question and answer session because they had a guest. But when I became a fixture in there, you could see how these guys actually worked on changing their behaviors. One of the groups I like is called Criminal Gangs Anonymous, and they call each other out for being gang members, and that had been their life. And but most of these people were older, most of them, 40s and 50s. They've made their mistakes, they've learned from their mistakes, and they want to do better next time they get out of prison. And they would spend time talking to the younger inmates about changing, letting that gang mentality. A lot of these inmates don't have fathers in their homes. We all know that. They were raised by gangs, and that's all they know. And,
right.
But so there's the culture among people that have learned the error of their ways and try to change younger inmates, try to let them learn sooner than they did. Learn while they're in their 20s and 30s instead of wait until they're in their 40s and 50s and seeing all the mistakes they made in their lives. So it can be a positive environment at times. I mean, prison by nature isn't positive. And with violence is and the gang influence on inmate behavior, it's difficult challenge at times. But sometimes the right staff members and the right core group of inmates can change the whole culture of the facility. And that's something that CCC has always been. The staff there have always been good communicators with the inmate population. They've always talked to them, and it's one of those housing units has 1,200 inmates, has 10 officers on the day shift, one sergeant, one lieutenant. So how do you control 1,200 convicted felons with 12 staff?
Yeah.
Sure.
The only way to do it is to talk to them. Know about issues before they become big issues.
Yeah, hey. you got to keep a handle on that. You got to know what's going on and try to mitigate those issues long before they become a problem.
You've got to really be observant. I would imagine the guys that are really great at that job, I mean, they see the problem coming a mile ahead of time. That's a huge skill.
If you create a positive environment where people want to be there, the rest of the population will help you identify their disruptive influences too.
Well, that's true, because they don't want everything to blow up for them. They're kind of liking it probably.
Yeah, they don't want the program to be interrupted, whether it's a lockdown or just having an incident on the yard so they have to lay out in the sun or the snow for an hour or two until we get crime scene preserved and everything. So that's the best thing you can do to run a smooth prison yard is make it some place people want to be. And I will say this, CCC and High Desert have always had challenges with just the geography. 40% of the state inmates come from L.A. County. And what I touched on visiting earlier, people don't want to drive 8 hours to come visit their loved one. So, and that's something that the department said in their response. But Shasta County also puts thousands of inmates in the system, too. And we are the closest prison to Shasta County.
Yeah, you're 2 hours.
Yep.
So that's a doable thing. Wow, what a waste. So are there any... let's say the governor gets recalled and we get somebody in there who, let's face it, if we get anybody in there who's not an idiot, that's mostly anybody that's not him. If you get rid of Newsom, how likely is it on the path it's on that it could be reversed?
Well, my hope would be anybody that would take over that office would pump the brakes on a wide variety of things to evaluate it on his own merit. And I think we'll be vocal enough to at least get all we want. The question is, why CTC? We want a fair, objective look at which prison we should shut down if they're going to close one.
Sure.
And I can tell you this. I know a lot of the people that work at CDCR headquarters from the agency secretary down, and that's why I am so confident this decision didn't come from them. They're smarter than me. They can look at the numbers that I've looked at, and they're going to know. If they actually rank the prisons, CCC would be somewhere between 5 and 7 to be cut.
Yeah. So does the governor have the ability on his own? I mean, if we get a new governor in there, do they have the ability on their own to stop this or slow it down?
Of course.
Okay.
Newsom's campaign pledge was to close one, maybe two prisons. There's nothing in law that says he has to. And with the reduction in crime or inmates, maybe not crime, but inmates, maybe it calls for it to close a prison. They've already closed DBI. Maybe it calls to close another one. Just, I want them to pick the right prison. The one that's best for the taxpayers of the state, best for the mission or the department. That's why I'm highly confident this did not come out of CDCR. This was strictly politics. We're going to close a prison in a deep red county, and we're not going to close a prison in where our constituents turn out to vote for us. It's crystal clear to me.
Naked politics. Just out of curiosity, do we really need to close any of them? I mean, you've been in this system for a long time. Does it make sense to close any of them?
One of the things that dictates to the Department of Corrections. We have a population control. It was referred to as the three-judge panel, but it was a case that they said overcrowding impacted inmates' access to health care. And then, because we were at 190% capacity, which I could do a whole show on that joke, because we designed these cells to have two inmates in it. But to ask for more funding 20, 25 years ago, the Department of Corrections, so every cell supposed to have one inmate. If we have two in there, then we're at 200% capacity. We were at 190. The Supreme Court said we had to, of California said we had to be at 137.5, I believe. So it talks about that in this LAO report that the state's keeping a 2,000 bed buffer in case there's a spike of incarceration. But I remember for 20 years you couldn't get elected to office. Statewide office unless you were tough on crime. Now it's exactly the opposite. That pendulum always swings. We just had a U.S. senator assaulted, mugged.
Yeah.
At some point, the media is going to start seeing the other side of it when their friends and families and neighbors are victims of crime, and then all those articles will be in the newspapers and on the news, and then we'll get tough on crime again.
Yeah, because we're getting ready to go back to that again. It's getting to the point of craziness. We have people roaming. I mean, we all hear the stories. People are arrested, and they're right back out there in 2 seconds.
Yeah, the citizens of the state will get fed up, and they'll start voting that way. But a lot of it, you and I both know, a lot of it's the mainstream media. Whatever they put out is what 80% of the voters listen to and believe.
Yeah, and there's that. Another little problem, except for the fact that you really can't hide the high crime because people live there. You can spin it if you're talking about another area of the country. If you're talking about foreign countries, they might not go there. But when everyone knows that you mostly don't want to go into our major cities just because of the crime.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.